welcome to Leadership Unscripted. CEOs and business leaders are increasingly expected to take stands on a range of controversial and politically divisive issues. But leaders risk weakening rather than strengthening their corporate brands if they are not thoughtful in how they respond. In this episode, Adam Goodman, one of the nation's top media consultants, talks about how to manage this challenge with Darden marketing professor Kim Whitler.
I'm going to set the stage a little bit, and I'm going to do this in a scripted way. So I'm going to veer off the beaten path, but I really want to put us in kind of the right mind frame for this topic. For several years now, there's been a steady drumbeat calling on leaders to, quote, stand up and to take a stand, in particular on issues that have little to nothing to do with the core business that companies may engage in. And let me just read to you a few headlines from different media organizations. Barron's in July of 2020, a headline said the following: a majority of consumers expect brands to take a stand on issues before purchasing. Forbes in 2021 said silence is no longer an option. Research shows consumers expect CEOs to take a stand on political issues. CNBC in April of 2021 said workers eager to see corporate bosses speak out on politics. This is a poll. And then Accenture, just a couple months ago, said companies need to take a stand on social issues. In addition to activists, the admonition has come from company leaders, the media, celebrities, and research firms. As an example, a headline from the World Economic Forum annual meeting in Davos said, quote, at Davos, the message to and from CEOs is clear. Let's take a stand. If you want to understand why taking a stand on divisive sociopolitical positions is good for firms, there are millions of articles. We're going to venture away from that today. Tonight, I want to take a liberal arts view and explore the side that does not get much attention. What is the downside and risk to taking a stand? At a time when the narrative, where the normative thinking is to pick a side, some would argue to contribute to division, I want to explore whether it is possible for CEOs to strengthen their brand and business around a unifying concept. Is there a better way? With that background, I'm really thrilled to introduce our guest tonight, Adam Goodman. He comes at this business challenge with unique perspective and expertise. Adam is a partner at Ballard Partners, was formerly the president of the Victory Group, and is one of the nation's top media consultants, helping corporate advocacy and political campaigns navigate strategic reputation challenges for over four decades. You might have seen him this weekend on CNBC. He's regularly on TV. He was honored as the first Edward R. Murrow Fellow at Tufts University's prestigious Fletcher School and has been dubbed a, quote, media icon. In addition to his corporate work, he has worked on more than 200 winning federal, state, and local races in 46 states. Now, you don't seem old enough to have accomplished all of that. but what's fascinating is that he has this insight from both the corporate and political worlds, giving him a very unique view on how many CEOs are frankly making mistakes that damage their firm reputations as they attempt to take stands. Now, as important as Adam's experience is, I am especially honored to host Adam tonight because of how I met him. And I think this really illustrates what's special about the Darden family. A few years ago, I had this exceptional marketing student in class. Her name was Alex Goodman. She and I were talking one day, passionate about everything marketing, and she said, Kim, you have to talk to my dad. From that introduction, Adam and I have had several conversations, and ultimately, I co-authored with both Alex, who is here, and Adam, her father, a case on the Disney Florida Parental Rights and Education Bill, or Don't Say Gay Bill, depending on what side you are on. Just in case you're wondering, Alex graduated from Darden, and we're very proud of her, and she is now a senior manager at Marriott, working on their elite benefits. So please join me in welcoming Adam.
Thank you. I think my daughter is proof positive Darden works. So just put a plug in for Darden right up front.
We didn't pay him for that, but we're very appreciative. So let me tell you how this will flow. I'm going to ask a few questions to try to set the stage, and then we're going to open it up to everyone. One of the things I do want to note before we get started, my experience with this topic is that it really can elicit strong personal emotions. Tonight, the discussion is designed to focus on how to think about this from a C-level perspective, because we are in the midst of CEOs and CMOs struggling. They're trying to do things, they're trying to take the right stand, make the right decision, and we're seeing more often than not mistakes made. And so tonight we're going to invite everyone to put on their consumer champion hat and to help us think about how to navigate a very hairy and thorny issue in a way that creates value for all consumers and in return the company. All right, so with that, I want to get started. You know, when I grew up, when we grew up, the world was different. You know, you had liberal friends, you had conservative friends, you argued, you then went out and drank. It didn't seem to matter. But something seems to have changed. We've gotten more divided. And by the way, somebody was saying earlier tonight, companies didn't used to be called on to take these stands. Right. Like, what's changed in society? What's the impetus? What's the context that's kind of driving this shift and this call for more companies to stand up?
Well, you know, if you look at the midterms that we just went through, it was proof positive that people are more engaged than ever. They want to be a part of the conversation, and social media has allowed more direct participation in that. That's been an absolute rule breaker and game changer all at the same time. And so there was a survey that was done by a good friend of mine, national pollster, 1,000 people, to kind of get a sense of the lay of the land, the atmosphere that this discussion has to be kind of contextualized by. And I want to just, if I can, just share a couple of the findings from that. And then later, we're going to talk about what it said specifically in terms of CEOs and corporations. But listen to this. This is a 1,000 sample national. And here are some of the key takeaways. One, the country's democracy is in danger of collapse. 2 in 3 Americans feel that we are in real trouble. And that goes across all partisan lines, 69% Democrats, 66% Independent, 69% Republicans. There's no difference. So there's a sense of loss of control institutionally that I think is creating an atmosphere of, I wouldn't say fear and panic, but of real concern. And when you're fearful of something, you tend to be more reactive. Number two is, it gets so bad that 43% of the survey say that within the next decade, there's likely to be a civil war in America. More than four out of 10 think civil war. It's gotten to that point. Next, the question was, if you're a Biden voter, do you think the blue states should secede from the union? 59%. If you're a Trump voter, do you think red states should secede from the union? Like 72%. It's way off the chart. We wouldn't have imagined having that feeling, much less conversation, 5-10 years ago. It's the reality today. Two other things. Both sides, Republicans and Democrats, think the other are bullies. It's amazing, isn't it, that 7 out of 10 Republicans think Democrats are bullies, and more than 7 out of 10 Democrats think Republicans are bullies. Bullies. Not just that they're wrong-headed, they have the wrong point of view, they're bullies. That shows you the emotional part. The final thing is, and this gets a little bit into, it's not just the media, by the way, because the media gets a bad rep. I think they're trying to adjust to the world that is, and yet they're still having to fight their own natural instincts about how to report the news in a way that comes off as more informational, less biased, more allowing the viewer to come to their own conclusions. Well, 70% of Republicans think the media is pushing disinformation, and 69% of Democrats think media is pushing disinformation. Mm-hmm. So there's a free fall of confidence in the country. And this conversation we're having and what companies should do into the free fall, understand that things are, in terms of the attitude of the nation, in terms of the conversation among people, is become much more tenuous than ever, which means the first thing, one of the big rules of thumb for any corporation and any CEO, do no harm. Whatever you do, do no harm. They say, well, wait a minute, you have to take the right side. You have to do the right thing. We've heard that from a number of CEOs recently. Do the right thing. And I know what the right thing is really the next part of the sentence. What do you mean, I know what the right thing is? What is the right thing, sir, ma'am? What are you talking about? Well, we have to do this because conscience dictates it. Your conscience, the conscience of your employees, the conscience of your suppliers, the conscience of your investors, where are you coming down with, you need to do this because this is right? And then the point that I saw in the last part of your last lecture, which is brilliant, is the idea that if you only get information from one end of things, if you only hear one side of things, if you're only challenged in one dimension, you miss the entire rest of the conversation. And in a country that is clearly very divided right now, that's a recipe for real peril.
If it's divided, what is prompting then CEOs to take a stand? Because, you know, we just explored this in class, and there's not just two positions on this. You know, on one level, let's talk about the Disney situation, because that's kind of fresh, that happened this year. The CEO can take a liberal position, which was be against the bill. They can take a conservative position before the bill, but they can also say no comment. That's out of bounds. We don't comment on that. Or they could also try to make a neutral statement, try to kind of what I call thread the needle. They don't stand on either side, but they try to maybe elevate the conversation to some general purpose or unifying statement. So there's four kind of possible options that they have. Why are they choosing, in most cases, you know, if you think about Coke or if you think about Delta or if you think about Disney, more often than not, they tend to take the liberal kind of view. Why are they doing that? Is it that they somehow believe that this is the position to take that will do the least amount of harm?
I don't think they think the latter. I think they assume the latter. I think they're doing it emotionally, psychologically, even rationally, because they think this is a mark of leadership. What does it mean to be a leader? It means to step up. It means when others are silent on something that needs a voice, that leaders step up. Even if the herd's going one way, you say, no, we need together collectively to go another. And I think that desire to feel leadership and to exhibit leadership is what drives a lot of CEOs into a very difficult spot. And when they feel that, which is, by the way, very human, it's a very human reaction to a lot of issues that we're talking about. Who pushes back? Once a leader says, you know what, I think we should go this way, then who comes into the room, so to speak? Who is advising that leader about, okay, you want to take a stand on voting reform in Georgia, which we're going to get to later. Okay, let's talk about it. And that person or that group has got to inform that leader about the upsides and downsides of the communication of conscience, which is what they think it is. It's a message of conscience that the leaders are trying to push. What are the downsides of that? You know, we talk about the SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I like, in politics, I start with threat. What's the downside? Okay, I understand it's gonna be a great commercial, it's gonna be a great press conference. What am I risking here? And the word, what am I risking, is a purposeful. What am I risking? Because the CEOs also, you know, have to consider, you know, survival, self-survival, right, as one of the imperatives of them being able to stay on the job and continue to lead, et cetera. But the I should not be I, it should be us. The corporate family is that, it's a family. It's a family of people. We talked about the suppliers, the investors, the employees. It's not the C-suite, it's almost everyone else. But if you want to lead on something, why is it that you have to stake out a position that is, by its very nature, going to be controversial? Why is it that you have to do it that way? And the answer, the simple answer, is you don't. But you don't fall silent. I think silence, a lot of times, is a sin. But doing major league activism is often, especially in corporations, not a virtue. It's not a virtue to go and say, I'm not only going to speak out about this, I'm going to take this to the limit. And it makes you, and therapeutically, I think, as again, going the human factor, it feels good. Yeah, we're going to go take the hill, right? Well, but you know, there are 25,000 troops on the Hill, and we only have three people next to you, sir. Are you sure you want to take the Hill now, right? There's another way to do it. And there's another way to show value and empathy and understanding, which, by the way, is how you address, CEOs should address most of the contentious issues. If they go that far, that's far enough. That's a signal. Now, will it please everybody? No. And as you know, because you repeated it earlier, it's the reality of the world that the CEOs live in today is there are situations where you may be bruised, but you have to make sure you're not buried. And too many, I think, leaders of corporations are moving perilously closer to the ladder when it's unnecessary and it's not reflective of the corporate family that they pledged they were going to do their best job to represent.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the downsides of taking the stand, because I'm still, you know, you said let's think about the threats, let's understand the risk, let's do no harm. Let's start by understanding the downside. So what are the downsides of taking a stand?
Well, let's take an issue, for instance. Pick an issue, right? Anything that is somewhat divided in terms of public opinion. Take voting reform. Okay. Start there. What do you do to express your desire of backing the concept that everyone should have the ability to vote, that it's one of the most critical functions of a democracy, that allowing for access, allowing for the opportunity to vote should be imperative in any democracy, much less America, right? So say that's where you are.
Okay.
That's okay for you to say that everyone should play. Everyone should be at the table. That is a common ground thought. Where you lose the common ground is where you stake something more specific, where you draw a line in the sand on something concrete that's very political. And you know what I'm talking about. The voting reform bills, really now plural, in Georgia, and what happened there. And it was unnecessary. It was unnecessary damage, I think, in terms of corporate branding and image. It was unnecessary because on the face of it, you were in trouble once you said, I am against, and you put a number on it.
So, you know, what's fascinating about this topic is, like I mentioned, we're in the middle of trying to understand this. This is a newer phenomenon. CEOs are still struggling through it. I do think, to a certain extent, Roe v. Wade and the abortion issue this spring, summer, and frankly, on the heels of the Disney mistake, Disney saw their reputation drop from 77 favorability to 44 overnight.
6 weeks.
In 6 weeks after they took a stance against the Florida bill. And then on the heels of that, you had the abortion issue. And I was working with a group of CEOs around that time. And nope, they knew they did not want to take a stand on that. That was a killer. So we're in the middle of learning about this. What's now starting to come out is academic research that kind of puts a number on what you're talking about. There's now four or five studies across different domains that all say the same thing, that there's a negative asymmetric effect, that what happens is that the people who agree with you, let me give you a thought experiment. Pretend like it's Disney,
right?
And you're on one side or the other, whatever side you're on. You either like the parental rights and education bill, or you are against it and you perceive it as a don't say gay bill. Now imagine if they take the position that you agree with. What happens is that's what you expect. And so there's not much upside on that. What happens though, if they take the opposite side, there's significant downside. And so the net effect is a negative, both on brand reputation and then purchase intent, employee perception, investor perception. So you're seeing kind of the academic articles starting to line up and give some data to what you're suggesting. What is it? So I want to come back to why are CEOs doing this beyond kind of the conscience? And in particular, why are they tending to pick kind of one side more than the other side? Why is it that there is kind of this right side and wrong side, if you will?
A couple answers. One, peer pressure. Their peers, a lot of their peers feel a certain way, and they want to go that way to remain, you know, popular within the flock. Number two is the loudest voices out there today. And I actually, this is one place where I think the media has shed its responsibility to be more responsible, has been feeding into extremism. Like one of the takeaways of the midterms, where Democrats actually outperformed expectations. They really did. And the Dobbs decision, having to do with Roe v. Wade, was a big part of that. But it was a bigger idea. That fell under an umbrella. The umbrella was extremism. The former president, I think Trump, reflected that for a lot of people. And I think that that judgment should have opened up a lot of eyes. And the other thing about the midterms is everybody was involved. We used to say, well, the midterms like the off year. Ah, we got a little, it doesn't really count. Let's wait for the on year, the presidential year. There is no off year anymore because of mail-in ballots. That has changed all the calculus. Campaigns are no longer election day campaigns. They are, you know, 30 to 60 day campaigns. We have to win every day. And if you lose early but win late, you're probably in trouble, and vice versa, and all the rest of this stuff. So all of that has changed. But I don't think that the corporate boardroom and CEOs are really caught up with that. And give you a little bit more, if I can, a little bit more empirical. Three other facts from another national survey. This should open every eye or ear in every courtroom in America. Dissatisfaction with the influence of corporations is at the lowest level it's been in a generation. Think about that. Dissatisfaction with the influence of corporations is now at its lowest level. And Republicans in particular, independents and Republicans, have dropped in terms of support for corporate corporations in America by 50% over like 2 years. Number two is, listen to this question. Is it a good or bad idea for companies to advance a political or social agenda supported by their executives? This is fresh out of the field. 29% think it's a good idea. 58% it's a bad idea. Remember, do no harm. And the final thing, in the, what we'll call the post-Disney world. Here's your choice. Should CEOs get more involved, are CEOs too involved in commenting on social and political issues and need to pull back, or CEOs have a responsibility to speak out on an important social and political issue and should continue to do so? In 2021, which is what, a year ago, it was a 50-50 split on that question. Yes, they should, really they shouldn't. 1 year later, 72% over 28 say no. They don't, should not do that. It's causing more trouble than it's worth. I don't like that. I don't feel good about that. And can I give you an opinion about why? You know how we go to the movies as a way of escaping reality? I think companies, corporations, I'll take Disney. I mean, international icon. Whether you liked or didn't like certain rides, going to Disney as a young kid, that was awesome. It was like, wow, magic. this is going to be a big day, yeah. Right? Or a big weekend or a big week. And that was a place that you could escape the reality of an increasingly difficult world. Does that make sense? But when they put their, not their toe, but both feet into the pond of political discourse, they shed that kind of cocoon feeling overnight. I mean, the numbers you cited, that happened in 6 weeks. You're talking about a company that developed a reputation over decades, and they lost it all. Well, not lost it all. They lost a big share of it. And by the way, I think they lost initially 10 billion or 15 billion in capital value in the markets. Yeah. The markets didn't like it either. It was unnecessary. All that the CEO had to do when confronted with the group that came to him however you define the bill, the Don't Say Gay or the bill or their parental rights bill, was to express on behalf of Disney an attitude, kind of a statement of intent, as opposed to, yeah, we hate that bill. And as we should go into, you know, going back to Georgia, you know, the fact that Coca-Cola so immediately rallied, Kim, behind the, you know, opposition to that bill, that Senate bill, was mind-boggling because no one said, oh, let's have a question. And by the way, the question leads to 18 other questions. Have you read the bill? It's like Obamacare. Obamacare was like, what was it, 28,000 pages long? No one actually read the bill.
Yeah.
Okay, they passed the biggest change in healthcare in American history, right? Well, this was like a 200-page bill or something. This was a 100-page bill. This is easier to read. Almost no one had read it. Yeah. And certainly Coca-Cola had. So the question is, so you're opposed to that, right?
Yes.
You're opposed to that. Okay, so.
Yeah, I'm Quincy. So we're going to actually role play something here that we did in a class where I had the students write the statement that the CEO should have made on behalf of Coke. And then I asked Adam to come in and play CNN reporter. And so this student, who was a very good sport, stood up. And I want you to feel what this poor student felt like. He had to play the part of Quincy. And so here's what Adam did.
So am I Jim Acosta here, or who am I on CNN? It's Steve, you know my personality.
I don't care, whomever you want.
Okay. So I understand you're against Senate Bill.
Absolutely. We stand firmly against the bill.
So you are against reducing the long waiting times for voters that go to the polls on Election Day?
Well,
so you're opposed,
not exactly that.
Right. And so you're also opposed to having any kind of valid ID for people that are voting absentee to be a requirement for validation.
Well, but there are issues with requiring voter ID. It can actually potentially suppress the vote.
And you think we should have extended runoffs. Runoffs sometimes go on for 8, 10, 12 weeks. They wanted to reduce the length of runoffs, so we aren't living forever in politics and campaigns. So you're against that, too.
Well, sometimes you need those runoffs.
And the fact that you actually took a stand in Georgia, I know Coca-Cola is based in Georgia. Why'd you stop there?
What do you mean?
How many other states currently have or have had in the last 12 months voter reform bills similar to Georgia? 19.
Where's okay. my?
That's right. Where's the cue card?
Yeah.
It's like 19 states. So what? So why did you go into Georgia?
But
you
well, were, because that's our headquarters.
Okay, but you didn't touch Oklahoma, Arizona,
because we
Utah,
don't care about those states.
Florida. Okay, that's it.
No, he was actually much kinder to me. You know what he did to that poor student?
I'm so sorry. I did. I felt badly about that. I just
No. What he said was, he said, you know, on page 99, it said that it was going to expand access. Why are you against expanding access? And the student said, well, I'm not. And then he said, on page 101, he said, did you read the bill? And of course, the student had not had time to read. He goes, no. And he said, well, where do you stand on abortion? Where do you stand on economic reform? Here's five other bills that are in front of us. Where do you, Coke, stand on all of these very contentious bills? And then he said, and this was the moment, this was the mic drop. He looked at him, he said, since you're taking a stand today and that you feel so strongly about mm-hmm. that, where were you in the year 2000 when democracy hung in the balance and Coke did not take any stand? And the point that was so palpable is that when you take a stand, you enter a much bigger dialogue. And, oh, by the way, your behavior is scrutinized in the past and you set a precedent for the future.
Once you move into that arena, you are fully in the arena. And so say a group comes to you and says you must take a stand on the
so
Dobbs decision.
So what do you do? How do you handle that?
First of all, as a CEO, empathy, understanding, engagement, okay? You have to be willing to sit down and listen to people. And these are times when people are talking over each other, right? There's very little seemingly common ground. It's very difficult to have conversations with people, among people who are coming from different places, which is sad, by the way, because former President Bill Clinton, to use an example, I remember he said once, you know how we solve all the problems of government? Of course, I said, how? Right? He said, lock all the leaders in a room and refuse to let them out until they resolve the issue. Lock them in, literally, lock them in the room. After, you know, they go nuts and their cell phones lose power and they can't get to the outside world, good thing's going to happen. You need to sit down and fully understand and try to understand what's going on. And the willingness to show that your point of view is not the only point of view is critical. Years ago, the former governor of Wisconsin was running for re-election. The issue was abortion. He's pro-life. Was very concerned about the swing middle in that election, which was decidedly more pro-choice. Went into focus groups. with this message. He said, I'm Tommy Thompson. It's Tommy Thompson. He said, I'm Governor Tommy Thompson. Let me tell you where I stand. So very right up front, he says, this is where I stand. And the key part of that message, 30-second commercials, I only talk, and my daughter would attest, I talk in 30-second commercials. That's maddening, probably, to be around me at times. Is the end of the commercial, he said, these are my views. And as always, I'm ready to listen to yours. The pro-choice people in those focus groups went, they said, wow. You could feel the body, you see the body language first and the reactions. Okay, look, I'm pro-choice and I don't agree with his position, but at least he's gonna be open. He's gonna be more understanding. That's how you take on the mob. And I think in Disney's case, there was a petition signed by, I think it was 200 employees,
200,
right?
190,000
and a 58,000 person organization, whatever it was, right? 200 people, I'm not belittling the 200 people, by the way. I'm not belittling their issue. But the CEO said, oh my God, you know, they have a mandate here. And they're basically saying this our way or the highway. And he caved to that as opposed to first engaging. Let me find out what it is that you're concerned about. Okay, I hear you. Let me tell you, there are a lot of, you know, it's a big family. So what we can do is issue some kind of statement of understanding, purpose, et cetera, without saying, and by the way, that terrible bill that just came out of Tallahassee, Florida, we're totally against that. And when the governor, in this case, Governor DeSantis, took that on, they went right down the slippery slope of unintended consequences and their capitalization too on the markets. And that was the wrong way to do it. So it doesn't mean you ignore, you don't ignore. But it doesn't mean you don't engage, you absolutely engage. But the desire that a lot of CEOs have to show leadership and trying to go that last step, the next step, is what CMOs and others in the organization should be at the table saying, ma'am, sir, this, let's slow the train for a second, because you're headed into a place of opening up a whole Pandora's box of issues. And once you open up anything in Pandora's box, you're inheriting all those ills.
So this is one of the things that we explored with we actually had a class earlier today, an EMBA class, and we explored this topic. One of the challenges I see is what I call the C-level blind spot. And the blind spot, mm-hmm. by the way, I see this in marketing organizations. Mm-hmm. If you surround yourself with non-diverse thinkers, people who have the same ideology as you do, then it creates this blind spot and you're failing to listen, to learn, and to understand. That can almost create a view that you have the right point of view, or that the position that you're going to take is on solid ground, because you're failing to see the whole spectrum or understand the whole spectrum. Are you seeing this when you work with boards and CEOs? Mm-hmm. And then I want to turn it over mm-hmm. to the audience. When you work with CEOs and boards, are you seeing kind of a like-mindedness that pushes them in a certain direction?
Groupthink? It's groupthink, no question. And again, as I said earlier, it's understandable from a human standpoint that you have a reaction. Because, you know, I always used to like to say, as my father used to say, we use our minds to justify what our heart feels, what we're feeling inside. And the first reaction is something here. And then you say, well, okay, so what am I gonna do with that feeling? Charge the hill, right? With three people versus 20,000 that are sitting up there to take you out. And that's what leads to that predicament. It doesn't have to, what I'm not suggesting is, in a time when some want you all in, and if you're not all in, you're all out. Which of course is perilous in itself, because I could be all in with you, Kim, on 19 issues. But on issue 20, if you say, wait a minute, why aren't you with us on this? Well, I'm having a little concern with that. Then they go after you, right? Then you're dissed, you're dismissed, you're canceled, everything else. They forget about the 19, they remember the 20th. And of course, in life, it's always the last act. It's always the last thing that people remember the most. So, but it's, again, to CEOs, it's very understandable. But understand, public opinion has started to really move and shift, because I think we are tired of being upset with each other. We are tired of being at each other's throats. We want something a little bit healthier, better, more mature, more meaningful, more collective. And I think that the CEOs of America, they understand that. They could lead that charge in a big way.
Well, thank you so much for all of you for being here tonight for this special session. And especially, Adam, thank you for bringing your wisdom, your experience, your multiple decade experience to this, I think, important and evolving topic. We will learn more over the next months and years and hopefully help companies, C-level leaders, do a better job of navigating what is a very difficult and challenging issue.
We need businesses to succeed for all the obvious reasons. And this is one place they can do a much better job of understanding what the dynamics are in the world and to get on top of it and lead in the way, I think, when they look in the mirror, they feel good about themselves and their role as the head of a company.
Great. Thank you so much.
Leadership Unscripted is a Darden speaker series hosted at UVA Darden DC Metro in Arlington, Virginia. To learn more, visit us at darden.virginia.edu.